This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, I'm Sharad Kutin. With me, Melissa Idris and Tan Chung Han. And the morning run continues. Remember, you can always be part of this conversation by tweeting us at BFM Radio or WhatsApping us at 018-789-8899. Now, we're coming up to the start, not just of Hari Raya, but the World Cup. That's getting the whole world excited. I mean, I think this sport has literally billions of fans. The question is, what makes a country good at football?
Yeah, so this was a question that was posed by The Economist, and I think they did a brilliant job of juxtaposing a country like Uruguay versus, say, the United States, right? How can Uruguay punch well above its weight when it comes to football? You know, if you look at the population, it's got 3.4 million people, which is less than the size of Berlin in terms of population. So, but then it's got, you know, players like Luis Suarez, and it does really well. I think bookies are, I'm not going to say what bookies are saying, but according to the Economist, bookmakers place it at 8th spot in terms of winning this World Cup. So if a country like Uruguay can do so well, why not much larger countries like the US, for instance?
Right. So The Economist comes up with four practical steps as to how these countries can, you know, go on to achieve more footballing glory, so to speak. So, real quick, first step is to encourage children to develop creatively. Mm-hmm. Second, stop talented teenagers from falling through the cracks. Number three, make the most of football's vast global network. And fourth, prepare properly for the tournament itself.
Wow, so none of those steps actually were. The thing I would think about would be to invest tons of money into the game, right? Into building stadiums and training facilities and player development. Is that not part of the equation at all?
Well, you know, you would think that in countries, say, so take another big country like China or India. And when you look at India or South Asia, I mean, football is not that big as a
popularity.
Yeah, it's not big.
Versus, say, cricket or something.
Cricket, yeah. Right. Mm. So cricket's big. And people are playing it all the time. Kids play cricket all the time. They know the game. They know the rules. They're bored. Bodies become quite, comported in a way that makes them like good at cricket, right? They don't know how to twist their bodies and
really,
you know, bat. Yeah, because batting is a particular kind of skill, right? Mm. You watch and you model yourself on those players. Now, if you don't have a tradition of footballing, and I know India has football teams now, and they're struggling to win popularity, a visibility, and support from the fans. Now, and I think that's probably more important: the culture, the madness that goes behind. The love of the game.
Well, that's okay. That's interesting. But what about, say, Malaysia? Because we have a footballing culture. We mm-hmm. love the game, you know.
We have badminton. So badminton, can you imagine Malaysia, tiny little Malaysia, was top of the leagues when it came to the Thomas Cup, right? For years. Mm. There we were, Malaysia, Indonesia, Denmark. What other strange little countries that did so well at badminton? Because, yeah, there's a love of the game.
Right. Sure. You know, but then looking at Malaysia, right, and I recall a chat that I had with Dato' Rajagopal, the former national coach, and he speaks about how in Malaysia, while we have a love for the game as fans, it doesn't necessarily translate into, say, you know, dedicated resources when it comes to training kids. Give you a great example here. So kids, you know, you're playing football and on the weekend, then guess what? Come exam time, all right, no more football for you. Go and study. Football can wait, right? It's those kind of attitudes, I think, that really, you know, shape you know, the early stage development of football here in Malaysia, because we certainly have the talent, we certainly have the resources. So, I mean, right now, Nestle has a tie-up with FC Barcelona to, you know, try and train our young kids here with football, right? So you have those resources at our disposal. We've had plenty of exposure to top-notch football, yet, you know, we don't seem to be excelling at the highest level.
Yeah. I also saw that China is looking to, you know, China wants to become a football superpower by 2030. 50. Mm. So they have invested millions into a training center, the world's biggest football training academy, apparently. It cost them $185 million to build. But they, I believe, failed to qualify for the World Cup this year. They've lost 1-0 to Syria, and that prompted street protests in China.
Well, what are they protesting against? This is a war-torn country.
The humiliation of losing against
Syria. Okay, so what is animating the Chinese push for football? Is it a love of the game, or is it a love of winning and being on top?
Of wanting to be a superpower, soft power.
It's actually Xi Jinping. So he is a huge fan of football, and so he's dedicating all these national resources towards trying to build this footballing superpower within China, right?
Without passion for the beauty of the game, I mean, I don't mean just by the leaders, I mean by the people, I don't see how you're going to succeed. Well, we'll be back with a look at the brain drain and how it can be stopped. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.